Shows the rover in its ready to launch configuration. The final cover is being removed from the wheels. This is a Pathfinder activity for installing the RTG.
Welcome to the Meta World Stoopaloop Show. I am your host. I am A. Karen Elliott. Today on the Meta World Stoopaloop Show, we bring you the second half of our look at Mars. All the touchstones are touched: the face, the pyramids, the water. Previous life thereupon and the possibility of strangely humanoid alien species that haven't seen fit to evolve beyond the humanoid form. Which really doesn't necessarily seem like the most economical shape a hyper-evolved being can take. The best part about the space shows is that they are not here. They allow one to take one's brain elsewhere, whether it be deep-seated savior programming or at least just the ever-so-enticing idea of a large spherical desert that has absolutely nobody on it. No Elon in these and no Jeff Bezos. We'll maybe have a Pigs in Space series down the road at some point, but actually we're more likely to do a reproduction audio track of Laika the Space Dog's entire journey into Oblivion. Oblivion Elon. Hop one of them billion-dollar babies yourself and off ya go, cowboy. Be a man about it. I think Bowie get into these shows. About the height of a gray and had a neck that went all the way up to the crown of his skull at the back. This has no bearing whatsoever on the value of his earlier work. Today on the Meta World Stoopaloop Show, Mars Part 2.
In case things go wrong,
I am your host, I am A. Karen Elliott, and you are listening to CKUW 95.9 FM.
What do big volcanoes do, Art? They belch stuff out.
Right.
So that's another type of anomaly, anomalous things that I would look for in some of these features that I see.
It is sifted as it falls through an opening into the interior of the lander. Some of the material falls into a chamber where it can be tested for the presence of life in a biology experiment. In this chamber, the soil is moistened with a liquid that includes food that Earth microorganisms thrive on. A sample of the Martian atmosphere is pumped into the chamber and then the weight. Microorganisms acting upon the food in the soil will give off the gas. gas will mix with the Martian atmosphere, and when it is analyzed by chemical detectors, it may reveal that life is present. While the first experiment is taking place, some of the soil is also falling into another chamber for a second biology experiment. This time, the soil is also moistened with nutrients, but the nutrients are tagged with radioactive carbon-14. If the organisms are in the soil sample, they will feed on the nutrients and pass the radioactive carbon off with their gases. The gases can later be analyzed by other equipment aboard the lander, and the presence of radioactive carbon will indicate the presence of life. In the third and final biology experiment, a sample of the soil is fallen into a third chamber where it receives a small amount of moisture and an atmosphere of carbon dioxide gas tagged with radioactive carbon-14.
There is a complete absence of stray features on this mesa. Although there are additional features on the face, they appear to be of an ornamental nature that fits in with the face theme, the fact that it has a headdress and possibly a crest.
They, I say they, whatever parent planet, put that face up there.
Well, one of the executive lines of thought I was going to complete related to that, because perhaps the they realized that the planet was going to explode and looked around for another place to go to live, and they would have noticed Earth. And perhaps there was a migration, not a mass migration. You could only put so many of the population on board spaceships. But they may have migrated here to Earth shortly before 3 million years ago, and they couldn't have breathed our atmosphere or lived in our biosphere without protective environmental suits. But with it's a space-faring civilization if these artifacts are artificial. So they would have had advanced knowledge of DNA, and they could have produced a hybrid species from the primates here that would have their appearance and intelligence.
Dr. Van Flint, have you ever seen the ancient pictographs here on Earth of beings in helmets?
Yes, I have.
Just a thought.
Yes.
All right, we're going to have to take a break here. We wanted to make a phase on Mars. Could we do it?
It's about a mile and a half across. It's a huge structure.
The life in there was developing. So I don't see a problem that we would like wipe out Martian biosphere by bringing humans and their microbiomes to Mars, but we can definitely alter it. So that would be the contrapoint to Robert's argument. But even if that was supposed to happen, in my personal ethic codex, that's still something that will happen eventually. So we.
Yelena, if your instrument is built and it stands astride a SpaceX water mining operation using tons of water from the Martian subsurface for propellant generation, we would wash away, right? The contamination from the astronaut would go down dramatically.
I was now arguing for planetary protection in regards to damaging biosphere on Mars by bringing Earth life there. although we have exchange of meteorites, it's not that frequent, and it's possible that the last update of the Martian biosphere by Earth biosphere was 65 million years ago. And because Martian biosphere is much slower, the colder the environment, the slower the evolution, because you have slow replication of bacteria. It can be that the bacteria on Mars are basically 65 million years ago on a biological warfare in microorganisms. So,
system opened later. We had all these sequences going closer to the surface. We made a crater. We'll try again. So, Mars is an active place. The Mars Express cameras are revealing an interesting, fascinating place. From our perspective of the largest volcano in the solar system, Olympus Mons, we were able to see the summit crater, looking at it directly overhead. This is the size of the state of Connecticut. Now we're going to focus on an area right over here, which is the size of the city of Houston. The city of Houston would lie under that landslide. Interesting perspective looking at Mars from an angle as our human eyeballs would look at it, should we be in orbit. Here's an image that has a stretch. The vertical has been exaggerated, but it's a fascinating history of geological events. Material coming down here, ponding here, and eventually coming out and filling this basin. One end of the large canyon, equal to the size, the distance of the United States from the west coast to the east.
In particular, they were kind of explosive. The reaction happened very quickly, and then it went to protocol for how you would detect microbes. The soil was very reactive, and the reactions were somewhat like Earth life would produce, but they were different in detail. In particular, they were kind of explosive. The reaction happened very quickly, and then it went to ran out of in what's called its exponential phase very fast, like within 2 days. But one of the instruments, which was the labeled release instrument, results were fully consistent with biology. The other two instruments were considered not to be consistent because they did a step where they took the soil sample and then heat sterilized it, essentially heated it up, and then ran it through the instruments again. And these two instruments still showed a reaction, but this one did not. So it's fully consistent with biology according to the protocol that had been laid out in advance.
So this is complete. We will enter a 10-minute built and hold at T-minus 4 minutes. On Friday, we held our flight readiness review, and it was very successful. But at the very end, we received word that during routine monitoring of the flight termination system batteries, we had an indication that one of the batteries was going bad. And so we started activating a pair of batteries. We removed the battery that was going bad, sent it back to get inspected. And unfortunately, the time that it takes to activate the batteries and install it on the vehicle, it cost us one day. And that's why we slipped the launch from the 25th to the 26th. This past Sunday, we held our mission dress rehearsal.
The fact that interest was always in me, but it wasn't until later that I really got into this. So in 2016, I had started a website called weirdhistorian.com, and I had a lot of stories on weird history. I love all kinds of strange, weird history. And I had heard somewhere along the line that Nikola Tesla had tried contacting Mars in some way, and I thought, well, let me look into that. That would be a fun story to write for this site I was getting rolling. And so I started looking through newspaper archives online, and instead of finding the Tesla story, at least right off the bat, I stumbled across this story, and as you can see, the headline, Been to Mars, Yep, Talked to Him, and Saw Big-Eared Folk. And I thought, this is 1926, by the way. And I thought, what is this? This is like the strangest headline I've seen in the newspaper. So I put Tesla aside, and I started digging into this story more. And this was a man in London who's a London lawyer named Hugh Mansfield Robinson, and he claimed to be in telepathic communication with a Martian woman. She was 7 feet tall, she had big ears, tall hair. In fact, as I dug further, I found an illustration of her. Kind of has like Marge Simpson style hair. Her name was Uhuru, which I love. I don't know if you can see, it's down there on the little model that was made. But again, you have these amazing headlines about this story. Scientist hopes big-eared Martians yet may get radio, says he has replied to radio to Mars. His telepathic friend basically was talking about the giant Martians and said that they smoked pipes, drank tea, and drove cars, but never strike, he declares. So they were much more advanced than we were, much more civilized here on Earth. So basically what this guy was doing was he was claiming to have these telepathic communications and learning about all the wonders of Mars and Martian life. And he decided he was going to try to send a telegram to Mars in 1926 because Mars was in opposition that year. And that means that's the point in its orbit when it's closest to Earth. So it's about 35 million miles away. So at that time, London had the world's most powerful radio tower in the world. It was called Rugby Radio Tower. And he decided that he could send a telegram at that point. It was October 1926. And maybe that could reach Mars and we could get a response. This is actually from the British Telecommunications Archive. This is the one of the memos that was going with the with this attempt to send the telegram. He sent it twice. This was actually, so 1926, this may not surprise you, but he didn't hear a response from the Martians. 1928, opposition happened once again, so he tried again. And again, this was making headlines, by the way, around the world. This was written up in the New York Times. I think you saw one of those clips was from the Times. This was major world news.
Science has studied Mars, the only planet where life may exist. Now the screen creates for you the fascinating, frightening spectacle of the first flight to Mars. Hurtling through the universe, rocketing toward terrifying dangers.
Heavens, we're heading right into it. This could destroy us. You have to get out of
here. On toward Mars, with disaster threatening at every moment.
If we've got Earth and Mars in their orbits around the Sun, they make a close pass about every 2 Earth years, okay? So they made the first close pass right down around here. The second one was there. So it's a little more than 2 years between close passes. And you can also see that Mars's orbit is pretty elliptical, so not every close pass is the same. When it was down here, close pass was a lot closer than when the close pass is someplace out here, like in the Earth. And so if you're an astronomer wanting to learn about Mars, the times that you concentrate are during those periods every couple of years when Mars is at its closest, at its brightest, at its biggest in the telescope. By the way, 150 years later, when you're launching a spacecraft, you launch a spacecraft every 2 years, and it's easiest make that trip between Earth and Mars, which is one reason why the government shut down last month, or this month, a Mars launch scheduled for about 3 weeks from now was declared an essential service, because if they slipped by 3 weeks, they would slip by 26 months.
They evolved. And of course, there's a lot of really special places to go throughout the solar system, but Mars has always held a special place in that exploration. If I could have the first graphic, please. Going back to the Mariner missions, the Mariner flybys, and the Viking landings, Mars has always held that special place up through even our current missions, the current series of orbiters and landers and rovers that are currently operating on the surface today, and of course leading up to Perseverance, which is about to launch. Some of the reasons why we've always found Mars to just be such a special place and so fascinating, for one, it's relatively accessible. It's relatively close in the solar system. We can get there, we can arrive in a matter of about 6 to 7 months. So that's relatively short on the planetary exploration timescale. But in addition, it also holds a lot of really unique scientific value, particularly for trying to understand planets with rocky surfaces and planets with atmospheres, helping us understand how they form and evolve and help us better understand our own history on Earth. Mars preserves on its surface some incredibly complex and diverse geology. On Earth, of course, our crust is constantly recycled, weathered and eroded, and so it's very hard to find places that have preserved that history from billions of years ago. And yet on Mars, we can find places where we see that full breadth of history preserved onto the surface, on the surface.
Starkly different, and that's a problem that astronauts and colonists in the near future are going to have to face. Perhaps first, it's important to discuss briefly what time even is at all. Time, when you think about it, is sort of a strange concept. In its most basic form, time is essentially just the progress of existence that appears to occur in an irreversible succession from past to present and on into the future. While the most widely used numeral system on Earth is the decimal or base 10 system, a system that most likely originated because it was easy for humans to count using all 10 of their fingers, ancient civilizations such as the Egyptians and the Greeks first divided the day into smaller parts based on a base 12 and base 60 system that we continue to use to this day. The base 12 system, coming from the fact that there are roughly 12 hours of daylight and 12 hours of darkness during each observed equinox, and 60 originating from, well, I don't really know, but it does divide pretty nicely with smaller numbers such as 10, 12, 15, 20, and 30, which may be why it was originally chosen. But all of this aside, what we eventually agreed upon was the fact that 24 hours did occur in a day, which is comprised of 60 minutes in each of those hours and 60 seconds within each of those minutes, except, of course, for the occasional leap second, which occasionally turns the last minute of the year into a 61-second minute. The problem that no ancient timekeepers ever thought about, though, is how would this system work among humans living on another planet? The system we all know of 24 hours in a day and 60 minutes per hour is specific to our current planet. So, how could a system like this that we already have end up correlating to Mars? Or rather, why even come up with a new system at all if the current one works just fine? The problem with doing that is that Mars rotates at a rate 2.7% slower than Earth, meaning that the Martian day is actually somewhat longer. But before jumping to the full day, let's begin with the smaller unit of time, the second. A second is really just a human perceived derivative of a larger time, and as a result, would be the exact same on Mars as it is on Earth. In fact, the precise measurement of a second is known as the atomic second, which is exactly measured as 9,192,631,770 vibrational periods of a cesium-133 atom. This, obviously, still applies on Mars, so seconds are good. But next up is where things begin to get a little more complicated.
Human emotions caught up in the terrific tension of the flight. Here is the suspense, the surprise, drama of the unknown. Flight to Mars.
Been expected. You will come with us now.
A ancient cities, a planet of wonders, both scientific and human, of exciting beauty.
You still object to my proposal?
To destroy these people and all the people in the world as well? Yes, I do.
Our planet is dying. If this ship ever leaves here, it may well be our last chance for survival.
No. And it would cost hundreds of millions of dollars, probably.
So now we're moving around, we're getting back over here. You can see that it's a cycle. It turns out it's about every 18 years that you get a close pass. So one of those is in 1877. During that close pass, two moons were discovered around Mars by a couple of Americans. And, okay, done with. There was an Italian astronomer named Giovanni Schiaparelli who was observing, and he thought that he saw something fascinating. He said, you know, I think I see something that looks, he called them canali. It got translated into English as canals. Maybe it should have been channels. But he thought he saw these kind of straight lines on Mars. But then the next close pass wasn't as close, so who knew? When the next close pass came around, about 1895, Schiaparelli was losing his eyesight. All he had then as an astronomer was your eyesight. So there was this American who got involved. His name was Percival Lowell. And he was rich. If you are from New England, there are towns and colleges named Lowell and also Lawrence. His mother was from the Lawrence family. Percival was a bright guy. He had a degree in math from Harvard. And he had traveled the world. He had been to Japan when few Westerners had been there. He had written a best-selling book. So here we've got this guy who's educated, who's rich, and is interested in Mars. So what does he do? He doesn't decide that he's going to fund a telescope for somebody. He decides he's going to build himself the best telescope in the world. And more than that, he's going to put it in the best place in the world. People were starting to figure out that it's not enough just to not have clouds. Because sometimes the sky is clearer than others, even though there aren't clouds. People were beginning to understand that's because the atmosphere is shimmering, so if you can get higher altitudes, so you're looking through this atmosphere, you do better. There's less water in the atmosphere. Water kind of messes things up.
Close to not quite half a mile high in its peak. I suppose that if we put the resources of the planet to the task, we could accomplish it, but it would be a project that might compare with the building of those pyramids in Egypt. It would take an enormous labor force dedicated to this goal.
What do you expect? I mean, the statement you have made is so strong that I would expect there would be a reaction from your colleagues, Doctor. What do you expect?
Well, I hope that colleagues in particular would not go by words that they hear on the air, but go to the written statements, which are at the website, especially go to the pictures and not just glance, but analyze them for themselves. There is a wealth of detail in those pictures.
However, this fourth instrument, which was not a biology instrument per se, showed there were no organics in the soil. And this was thought to be a showstopper. If there's no organics, then these can't be biological reactions. So for 32 years, we went along thinking there were no organics in Martian soil. Not even as many as meteorites were put into Martian soil. After 32 years, another experiment was performed that showed that there is peroxide in the soil, and that peroxide would actually have oxidized organics in that instrument during the heating stage. So the way the instrument works is you heat the sample up, and you give off the volatiles, and then they are analyzed with mass spectrometer. But no organics were seen. So in 2008, there was the Phoenix mission. It landed at 68 degrees north on ice-rich terrain. It was really there to look for, to study the ice, to study the polar region. But it also contained a similar instrument to the instrument that was on Viking. So the mission objectives were to search for a habitable environment, to search for the presence of organic carbon, and to measure the chemistry of the Martian soil. And a discovery, and it was quite a surprise, was that there is a very high concentration of this weird chemical, chlorate. Here's its chemical formula. And it's at, like, concentrations of about 1% of the soil. Well, why is perchlorate important? First of all, it's fuel. It burned, or could burn, organic carbon. If you had organic carbon in the soil, and you put it into an instrument that heats the soil up, it will combust with the organic carbon and produce CO2. And that's, in fact, what the GCMS on Viking detected was. It detected carbon dioxide coming up, but nothing else. It's also food. Turns out many microorganisms can use this for metabolism. And finally, it's antifreeze. It can lower the freezing point of water to typical temperatures experienced in the Mars core regions today. Unfortunately, I made my slides go right to the bottom, so maybe you're cut off by the table. Anyway, so the Phoenix mission, it turns out I was the head of the Biological Potential Science Working Group for the mission. And Phoenix found habitable conditions in the Mars high-latitude ice. But not today. Habitable conditions in the past, but the recent past. So basically, those conditions were that there was evidence for liquid water. The very first place we dug into the soil with the robotic arm, we found white ice, different from the soil, and that is produced, we think, by a freeze-thaw process. It's called segregated ice. We found calcite, a mineral that's only formed in the presence of liquid water, and we found patchiness in the perchlorate signature. This is spectrum patchiness, which suggested water was mobilizing it. But since perchlorate is extremely soluble in water, it would be surprising if we get moved around. As I mentioned, perchlorate is a biologically available energy source. If
The annual conference of people who basically want to send man missions back to Mars.
Yes.
The paper was accepted. And what it shows is that the distributions of these stains is very, very weird.
It is. I'm looking at figure 3 jumping.
Jump down now to figure number 3.
Yeah, okay. And we're looking at 180 degree difference from a planetary point of view, correct?
That's right. You've got a big cluster of stains in one place on Mars. And then if you looked at Mars as a globe, we'll get to that in a moment, 180 degrees away on the other side of the planet are where the rest of the stains are.
Yep, there they are.
And there's nothing in between.
And you've got them coded. The red dots indicating stain images.
That's right.
The yellow dots indicating light stain images. And the green dots indicating non-stain.
This is separate and Gill's coding, but as I said, we suggested that he do the map. And this became the central mystery all spring into the summer. We've had all kinds of discussions among ourselves.
Yes.
What in the world could be causing this distribution? Now, this distribution has a name. It's called bimodal distribution.
Simulated Martian sunlight is introduced. And if plant-like organisms are present in the soil, they will capture the carbon-14. Later, the original carbon-14 gas will be flushed out of the container, and the chamber will be heated to over 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit. If there is carbon-14 in the soil sample, it will be detected when released in the heating process. This would indicate plant-like organisms existing on Mars. But what life exists on Mars today? Could there be creatures like those that abound on Earth? Exactly what forms of life could exist on Mars? biology experiments are designed for the very small organisms, partially because of their abundance and their ability to survive environmental extremes. The Martian planet abounds with mysteries, from its volcanoes to its bleak landscape. We know this place only from a great distance. Its secrets are there for us to discover. But if we do not find life on Mars today, it may mean we just looked in the wrong places, or searched with the wrong instruments, or came at the wrong time. But if we do find life on Mars today, it will mean that life on Earth is not an isolated instance, and it will offer further evidence that we are not alone in the universe.
There were high hopes that the Viking missions might find clear evidence of life, but the findings were not clear, as we will see in the NASA film called 19 Minutes to Earth.
It was not just another day on the planet Mars. A spacecraft had successfully landed and was monitoring this unique planet. The information was transmitted, and it took 19 minutes to reach Earth. Even from the beginning of the Viking mission to Mars, we began to assemble more than just pictures of the Martian surface. As information was received, we began to piece things together and to understand a place, a planet other than our own. As the planet was orbited, we began to understand Mars through a series of incredible photographs. Photographs that, when assembled, told of the planet's history. We found remarkable evidences of running water. Here are just a few of what appear to be dried-out riverbeds. Although other evidence states that liquid water could not flow on Mars today, we can see that at one time in the past, liquid water must have flowed on the Martian surface. When did this take place? And was there life on Mars when these channels were filled with water? We now know where part of the Martian water is today. And that is in the permanent polar cap. Previously thought to be frozen carbon dioxide, we now have evidence that the permanent polar cap is largely composed of water ice. Here, you can see channels formed through melting of this ice. Other photographic evidence reveals a closer look at the Martian Grand Canyon, a system of huge canyons extending for 2,000 miles across the planet. What forces caused the surface to split apart in so many places? This raises the question as whether Mars is dynamic and active. Is it similar to Earth in that its volcanoes erupt lava on the surface? The evidence is clearly seen that Martian volcanoes have erupted in the past. And from this mission, we know that at least one quake has taken place recently on Mars.
In 2035, to send a rocket to Mars, because we will already be there. We're going to land on Mars in 2027. And the reason is this man is determined to make that happen. His name is Elon Musk. He's the CEO of Tesla Motors and SpaceX. Now, he actually told me that we would land on Mars by 2025, but Elon Musk is more optimistic than I am, and that's going a ways, so I'm giving him a couple of years of slack. Still, you gotta ask yourself, can this guy really do this by 2025 or 2027? Well, let's put a decade with Elon Musk into a little perspective. Where was this 10 years ago? That's the Tesla electric automobile. In 2005, a lot of people in the automobile industry were saying we would not have a decent electric car for 50 years. And where was that? That is SpaceX's Falcon 9 rocket lifting 6 tons of supplies to the International Space Station. 10 years ago, SpaceX had not launched anything or fired a rocket to anywhere. So I think it's a pretty good bet that the person who is revolutionizing the automobile industry in less than 10 years and the person who created an entire rocket company in less than 10 years will get us to Mars by 2027.
To exercise the team and their communications so that we're right on the money this coming Saturday. We held our launch readiness review today. No actions came out of that, and we're clean and ready to go. We plan on rolling out the vehicle out of the vertical integration facility on Friday morning. We should be on the way to the pad by 8 a.m. We will then connect the electrical, fluid, pneumatics, and environmental control system to the launch vehicle and the MOP. On Saturday, the team will power up the Atlas and Centaur at 3 in the morning. We'll start our flight control checks and facility chill down. My launch management team will be in place at 5:30 a.m.
And here you can see this was a telegram that he sent. It basically says, Mars, I think it says God is love here. That's basically what it's trying to say, Mars to Earth. So it's just sort of a small rudimentary message that he's sending. And he was being charged a long distance rate by the post office, which I thought was kind of fun because the post office was getting a lot of press for this case, and they were basically getting free advertising for their long distance rate because the stories were talking about it. So it was benefiting them at least. Didn't get a response. But he did say, because he was, you know, he could always telepathically communicate with Imaruru, and she was informing him that the scientists did receive the message, but the problem was on our end. Our scientists were not smart enough to receive the messages. This is what he was saying. So you can see here, I got the wrong thing in my hand now. This was a headline, this was from the Times. Britain says Martians failed to get his radio, were annoyed at having to sit up all night. In fact, this was driving the Martians a little crazy. What's going on? And then here you can see they're all gathered around waiting. This image from a newspaper from, again, from 1928. So as I'm researching this, again, this is just really, to me, was an incredible story. All the efforts he was going to, the stories he had, Uhuru's Tales of Mars. And the more I researched that, the more I started to uncover what was going on in the periphery. And this was just stuff I never learned about. I don't know if anyone here had heard of Uhuru before. I certainly hadn't. So I start learning about all the different scientists and astronomers, aside from Tesla. I did find out eventually, we'll get back to that in a second. Massive mirrors, put them all like a huge grid, and then they reflect sunlight, so send light signals, flashes to Mars. And he thought, that kind of size, eventually they would see, if they had equipment like we might have, they might see those flashes from Earth, and eventually be able to send a signal back to us, so they know there's some communication. That would have cost, by the way, $10 million in 1909, which is, I think, about $250 million today.
By the way we've constructed this thing, there's a good chance we might be able to bring back a couple of extra people. I didn't want to tell you until I was sure of it, but you're going back with
it. Tense, exciting adventure on a planet of forbidding danger. Starring Marguerite Chapman and Cameron Mitchell.
So, drier places are better? If you don't have, you know, a turbulent atmosphere, that's a problem. And being a well-traveled man, you looked around the map and you decided that the best place to put a telescope might well be, or at least in the United States, might well be not in one of the states, but in a territory, the Arizona Territory. The third one I want to mention that I think is another one of these absolute classics is Ray Bradbury's Martian Chronicles. There was a federal program for out-of-work actors and directors. This was funded by the government as a part of that program. Originally, it made some enemies along the way. Breaking news. We interrupt this program. Tune out. Sort of thing. And I don't know, do you call it a dialogue or a monologue? Well, it's, I don't know.
It also, of course, is a planet with an atmosphere. It has a climate, just like Earth has a climate. And much like Earth, the climate on Mars has changed over time. And so by understanding when and how that climate has changed helped us better understand our own climate evolution on Earth. It's also a place where, on the surface, since it's so old, it's preserved. We've also understood that in the last about 20 years, we've come to better understand that the surface of Mars was actually probably much warmer and wetter in the past with a denser atmosphere, and that perhaps several billion years ago, life could have possibly taken form on Mars as well, similar as it did on Earth. And by going back to Mars, we might be able to find evidence of when life could have taken place or could have taken hold on Mars. This is a study of astrobiology, of understanding the environments that could support life and understanding if and when life can actually come to be.
Five, 4, 3, 2, 1. Blast off for the fantastic Space Age Shock Show, The Wizard of Mars, starring John Carradine. The Wizard of Mars. Never before in the history of motion picture technology has there been anything like the frightening new dimension of ultra depth. It's not 3D, it's new. The most thrilling movie experience of all time. The Wizard of Mars dares you to remain seated as gigantic fireballs crash out of the screen and explode over your head. The Wizard of Mars double dares you to remain in the theater as a Martian electrical storm crashes into the audience. The Wizard of Mars triple dares you to retain control of your mind as telepathic creatures attack your brain, crash diving into a thundering time storm to experience the most incredible screen journey ever taken. A beautiful girl and three desperate men against the fury of Mars. Alien beauty of the Martian landscape and the glistening subterranean Martian canal as you ride the rapids into the fiery depths of the Martian underworld.
Now, you need to know this. Governments and robots no longer control this game. Private companies are leaping into space, and they will be happy to take you to Mars. And that raises a really big question. Can we actually live there? Now, NASA may not be able to get us there until 2040, or we may get there a long time before NASA, but NASA has taken a huge responsibility in figuring out how we can live on Mars. Let's look at the problem this way. Here's what you need to live on Earth. Food, water, shelter, and clothing. And here's what you need to live on Mars. All of the above, plus oxygen.
It's hard enough to build spacecraft, but on top of that, as we were approaching launch, the COVID-19 pandemic was surging in parallel.
Time is of the essence. It's just 4 months before launch. A limited number of essential workers are permitted on site.
It's very difficult to control whether or not face masks are worn outside of the workplace environment. It's easy when you're in a clean room, that's what you do. You wear your face masks, you wear your bunny suits. We actually felt safer in the clean room than we did in the regular environment.
Despite the team's best efforts, it's unclear whether they'll be ready to launch on time.
We launch to Mars typically every 2 years. And if we miss that opportunity, you know, that's a long time to wait.
One thing to understand about sending something to Mars is that we have a very short launch window. Mars takes about 2 Earth years to orbit the Sun, and every 2 years, Mars and the Earth are close enough to each other, and that's when we launch missions between the two planets. And if we miss this launch window for any reason, we would have to wait 2 years until we could try again.
And that wait could cost $500 million.
The team recognized we are already on the rails, right? We're about to take off. Let's just get the job done. If we focus on this target, maybe we'll unite the whole team as well. And in a way also give hope to everybody, not only on the US, but also around the world, that we still can manage to focus on a mission and focus on a bigger objective and then pull it off.
Live on Mars, you actually have to live in the subsurface because, well, people won't have to, but microbes have to because the ultraviolet light is sterilizing. But you don't need to go very deep under the surface. There are transparent particles in the soil that you could actually crawl right under. Microbes are small. These are millimeter-sized transparent particles. The chemical environment is otherwise very benign, and what this shows is all the different types of things that could be in the soil that would match with the perchlorate and allow you to make a living, essentially. So if you were subsurface. So we concluded that the icy soils in the northern polar region are habitable in modern times. The whole northern hemisphere of Mars is at low elevation, and because it's at low elevation, low enough elevation, the pressure is high enough for liquid water to occur. In the entire southern hemisphere, it is not. Liquid water, pure liquid water, cannot occur in the southern hemisphere at all, just because of the pressure constraint. There's ice, there's water available. Currently, the obliquity of Mars is low. It's actually very similar to the obliquity of the Earth. But over time, the obliquity actually changes, and it changes dramatically. It actually changes from 0 to 90 degrees. The whole planet flips over. You know, it's pretty amazing. But at high obliquity, the North Polar region is warm enough for that ground ice to melt to a depth of 1 meter. And that happens actually pretty fast. The high obliquity, this is actually a graph of the obliquity variations. As you can see, if you can see under the table, it's going up and down very rapidly. I have another slide about this later. But anyway, this has been the inspiration for a mission that we've been proposing to Discovery for 3 rounds now. So literally like the last 10 years of my life, I've been trying to get this mission flown. I would have been better off starting my own space company, honestly, than trying to actually win a proposal to fly a NASA mission to Mars. Anyway, we just submitted our proposal in June. We are awaiting the results. The PI of this mission is Chris McKay. Spacecraft is provided by Lockheed Martin, and it's the same lander, uses the same lander as Phoenix and InSight. Has a 1 meter drill and 2 life detection instruments and habitability assessment instruments. So we get back to this climate model thing. This is a graph that shows what the number of days are per year that for Mars year, that liquid water can occur just thermodynamically, pure liquid water at the surface. And this is some modeling by Richardson and Mishna, 2005. Nobody's been looking at this recently, and that's a problem, I think. But anyway, what you see is that up here where Phoenix was, which is actually up here, there are no days that you can get liquid water. But there are many days in the low latitudes to mid latitudes that you can get liquid water. Up to like in this area, like 200 to 300 days a year. That's a lot.